somehow managed to grab the vampire's controller, felt us spring away. But if she'd planned to send Luis Cesar careening off while we recovered, it didn't work, because he kicked the camera out from under him, sending it shattering into a thousand pieces against the wall, and fell as we did. And I learned that static could be used in more than one way. It cut out abruptly, either deliberately or because he had just splashed down, disrupting the creature's thoughts. And either way, the shock caused me to do the unthinkable. It caused me to trip. I landed on a troll's back, wet with water and blood. But instead of using him as a platform to jump to the nearby balcony and get away, I slipped off his shoulder, heading for the water 10 feet below, and hit something else on my way down. The vampire already had his blade back up, and it pierced our leg, a sharp, biting pain that became agony when it hit bone, and kept on going. The blade was so razor-sharp and was wielded with such force that it took me a moment to realize we'd just lost a leg. The part below the knee spun off into the fight, lost to view, and we fell backward into water over our head that was immediately fogged with red. The pain was stunning, the blood loss even more so. I prepared to dive, in the vain hope that I could beat the vampire to the bottom and lose him in the thrashing, battling pairs all around. Or at least get enough water between us that it would blunt the next blow and save our lives. Instead, he lunged for us, in a move almost too fast to see, even in slow-mo, and jerked us back up. "Luis Cesar, please!" That was Dory. I could hear her pain, her anguish, not only for us, but for him, what this would do to him when that thing let him go. And something of that must have gotten through, because for a split second, I saw him falter. But the creature was too strong, and reasserted control almost at once. The blue eyes, confused and horrified one second, were suddenly resolute once more, and the sword was being raised, and we were out of options. But somebody else wasn't. Luis Cesar was swarmed by a bunch of flying cameras, perhaps 20 or more, all hitting him at the same time. One smashed into the back of his head, another punched the side of his jaw, and then more and more at various angles, until the little things had kamikaze'd their guts out, like big, black, wildly swinging fists. They didn't hurt him, but the surprise brought us a second to tear away, and I didn't hesitate. I landed back in the frothing water, disoriented and desperate, and somehow grabbed a shield. It was a long wooden thing, heavy and unwieldy, a fact not helped by the depth of the water, which was now over my head. My foot couldn't reach the bottom of this newly formed lake, and I was off balance and rapidly losing blood from the leg. I nonetheless managed to get the shield up and block the next strike of the blade, only to have the wicked curved steel sink deeply enough that it caught in the wood, allowing the vampire to use the sword as a handle, and rip our only protection away. "Dory!" I yelled mentally. "Help me!"
"One second."
She was doing something with the hand under her control. Then she dunked us underwater, swimming for the bottom, and how was that supposed to help? I didn't get an answer, and the next second we were jerked back out of the tide. I'd been expecting it, and closed my hand on the wrist holding the sword as it slashed down. But even though I was putting everything I had into the fight, the blade kept coming closer and closer, a relentless, deadly weight, until the shiny surface reflected my strained face and startled, disbelieving eyes, and something else. I had half a second to see a giant mass of muscle, fur, and fury leaping for us before it was gone, and Luis Cesar along with it. For a split second, I watched him being dragged through the fight by a weir the size of a car, and then the view was obscured as the rest of Roberto's creatures appeared, a river of fur parting the water and immediately taking the fight to a new level. But not for long, not where the vampire was concerned. I saw him across the fray, battling the weir, and knew we had seconds at best. Not enough time to get away, not enough time to do anything. He was relentless. But so was Dory. She'd found the controller the vampire had dropped, and apparently it went with the fritzing, sparking wreck of a camera ball speeding toward us. The thing could barely fly and was listing hard to one side, But when the up button was pressed on the controller, that's where it took us, straining and fighting, but unerringly up. Toward the weapons, I realized. And then we shot through the doorway and into a vortex of light and sound that grabbed us like a fist, jerked us through, and spit us out somewhere else. Chapter 60. The pain made it difficult to concentrate, but some things you just don't miss. Like Cademan trapped behind some kind of ward, throwing his body against it uselessly. Like the fact that we were in a huge cave, like football field huge, with a long slit of an entrance providing a vista of snow-covered peaks that went on for miles. And like the fact that a mass of what looked like the rock monsters the Fae made were headed this way, only they'd gotten an upgrade. In spite of everything, I just stared. They were shaped like manlekins, but the size! I had no idea how large they were, but if they'd been standing still, I would have mistaken them for mist-covered mountains. Mist-covered mountains, with a tiny man, or Fae, I guess, riding on the shoulder of each of them. It was completely bizarre and strangely intimidating. And then things became more so. A woman turned to look at me from across the expanse of the cave, her diminutive blonde beauty on display in a gossamer white gown. It blew in the breeze coming through the crevasse, like her long, unbound hair, perfectly complementing the snowy mountains and brilliant blue sky behind her. My thoughts screeched to a halt, and then fell all over one another like a multi-car pileup, because that wasn't Alphilt. I stared at Ephridus, Cademan's beautiful sister, and wondered how we got it so wrong. And then Louis Cesar appeared, jumping through the portal, and I realized we hadn't. There were two of them. My brain went blank.
"I thought you said you could handle things back there," Ephridus said.
"I can."
It was strange to see such an expression of contempt on Louis Cesar's features, and even more to feel his boot slam down on my neck.
"Then what is she doing here?"
Ephridus regarded me mildly. There was no contempt on her features. There was no anything. Somehow that was more chilling than Alphilt's open hate. Ephridus did not hate. Ephridus was indifferent. Like her voice, when she said, "Kill her," and then turned away again.
"No!"
Cademan yelled, but nobody listened. And then Louis Cesar's sword was coming down, hard enough to bisect stone, and flesh, and bone, and everything else. Only it didn't. It bit into the rock close enough to my back to slice through my little black dress, but didn't touch actual flesh. For a moment I just lay there in a crumpled heap, barely conscious because of blood loss, and not even daring to breathe. But there was no second stroke. Louis Cesar walked off, his eyes on the vista outside, and the giants headed our way. I stared after him through half-closed eyes, and tried to think past the agony in my leg and my steadily slowing heart rate. Louis Cesar might have distracted Alphilt long enough to spare me, but I was going to bleed out in a minute anyway. Maybe less than a minute, because the pain was already diminishing, and a pleasing feeling of warmth was spreading through me. I'd heard that people felt that way when freezing to death, mistakenly believing they were getting warmer, when the opposite was true. And although I knew the stone was bitterly cold against my wet clothes, it didn't feel that way. Not that I was complaining. Death was nicer than I'd thought. And then somebody had to ruin it.
"Dari."
It was barely a whisper, more a susurration of breath than anything else. But it annoyed me, like a buzzing insect that wouldn't go away. I wanted to swat at it, but for some reason I felt like I shouldn't move. Why shouldn't I move? I couldn't remember. And then that warm feeling was back, only with a vengeance. It wasn't warm this time, it was hot. To the point that I almost yelped in pain as what felt like a miniature lightning bolt went through me and jolted me out of the fugue I'd slipped into. I blinked around in confusion and saw Cademan staring at me. Okay, that explained why I hadn't bled out, I thought. And then I realized that he was whispering something. I tried to pay attention, I tried hard, and it gradually got easier.
By the wall. Preferably more than one. I squinted at him, and finally realized that he was waiting for an answer.
What?
He looked frustrated. I know you're in pain, and I am sorry for it. Truly I am. But I need you to concentrate, please.
Okay.
There are crates of weapons, do you see, along the far wall?
I gazed around. I saw the crates, our missing weapons, I guessed, but they were dwarfed by piles and piles of bones. There were thousands of them, maybe tens of thousands. I stared at them blankly, wondering how I had missed that, and why I felt so sick.
Dory, Cademan said, very clearly and deliberately, I need you to get to one of the crates and find something to destroy this ward. Can you do that for me?
I looked at him. I looked at the crates. I looked back at him. No.
Dory, you must.
I don't have a leg.
But they do,
Cademan whispered furiously. I followed the direction of his gaze, to where a handful of trolls were staring at the approaching giants, including the two who had killed Olga's nephew. They had their backs to us. I couldn't see their faces, but those physiques were memorable. And then a random troll wandered away from the rest to relieve himself in a corner, and Dorina grabbed him. Near-death experiences were freaky, I thought, because I could almost see her, a dark shadow crouched on his shoulders, riding him across the room. Had anyone been paying attention, the jig would have been up pretty much immediately, because the guy looked like he had palsy. He was jerking and shivering and staggering about as he tried to fight her off, but the giants in the mist were holding everyone's attention. I looked at Cademan.
What are you doing here?
My sister.
It was vicious. She met Alfilt at the consul's home, and they joined forces. She tricked me into coming here by telling me that she'd heard her husband talk about strange weapons being developed in the mountains, which I believed because we'd heard the same.
That's what you wanted Claire to help you find.
He nodded. We'd heard rumors of Eastland establishing laboratories outside his capital, away from the prying eyes of any spies I may have been able to suborn. But it's becoming harder to scout out his territories. His sentries are formidable.
Cademan's eyes found the walking mountains again.
Yeah, I guessed so.
Dorina's troll lurched into some stacks of crates, spun, and lurched the other way. Cademan sighed. So Efreetus brought you here because, I asked.
She told me what I wanted to hear, that she was finally willing to give over her husband and help us in the war. She told Eastland the same thing in reverse, that she'd only betrayed him in order to gain my confidence so that she could deliver me to him. She knew it was the only thing that would get him out from behind his palace walls, the chance to kill me personally. In reality, she intends to blow us both up, leaving the throne of each kingdom vacant.
So her son can take over.
He nodded. We are not easy to kill, Eastland and I. But this,
he glanced around,
will probably do it.
And Alfilt gets revenge for what your ancestor did to her.
Yes, it seems they found common ground in my death.
Great. Good to know. I wondered if it was a bad sign that the hard stone beneath me was starting to feel good, comfortable even. I closed my eyes just for a moment.
Dory, don't go to sleep.
Yes, don't nap now. You'll miss it, Efreeta said, turning around. She had to be 30 yards away, but I suppose those ears are good for something. And then Dorina was flying back to me as the troll took a knife in the gut courtesy of Louis Cesar, like I was about to.
Stop, I said desperately. Stop! You're killing your own brother because you want your son to rule? Why not just wait?
Wait? She paused politely. Isubron said he'd challenge for the throne when Aiden grew up. Your son is far more experienced, far more skilled. He ought to have a clear advantage. Or are you so sure that you birthed a weakling?
And suddenly, there it was,
the flash of anger I'd seen on the stairs back at Claire's, when I'd spit in the eye of the manlikin that I guessed Efreetus had been controlling. "My son is quite capable of defeating the half-breed," she snapped, "were he on his own. But he won't be on his own, will he?" Her eyes slid to her brother. "If you want someone to blame for your death, for the child's, for all of this, look to... what do they call you here? Cademan?" Her lip curled. "Great king. Even in your human name you reveal your ambition." "Ambition?" I looked from her to Cademan. "What is she talking about?" Cademan didn't answer. He was too busy glaring at his sister. "Poor deluded fool," she told me. "You don't even know why you're dying, do you?" "Why, don't you enlighten me?" It was becoming harder to think, harder to breathe. Not that it mattered. "She's stalling," Louis Cesar snarled and started forward. But Efreetus caught his arm.
"A moment. I'm going to enjoy this."
She looked back at me. "My brother and I both grew up with the same ambition, to see Faerie united under a single crown, one king or one queen." She smiled. I suddenly wondered how much power her son was actually supposed to have in this new order.
"Our plan was to end the constant bloodshed," Cademan erupted. "We were supposed to end the perpetual warfare that has torn our world apart."
"Oh, I will, brother," Efreetus assured him, "as soon as you are dead."
"I don't understand," I said, because I really didn't.
"My brother and I chose different paths to power," Efreetus informed me. "I joined ancient bloodlines through my marriage, ones that had long been kept apart by old quarrels, and produced a son who controls all four elements. I brought together the complete spectrum of our greatest powers in one prince, who every member of the Light Fae has reason to support."
Her eyes slid to Cademan.
"Every member except one." "My brother tried something similar, but his marriage to the queen of what you call the Green Fae was a signal disaster," she laughed. "It produced no sons or children of any kind, nor did any of the concubines he took thereafter. How it must have galled you, brother, to see me succeed where you had failed."
"I have a son," Cademan snarled.
"Yes, a half-breed, a mongrel half-human disgrace that you would set before—"
She caught herself.
"My brother," she continued more calmly, "knew the Light Fae forces were almost certain to rally to my son, enough of them at least to make his rule inevitable. So he tried a new tactic. My child combined all strains of royal Light Fae blood in one person, but my brother would go a step farther. He would go where no one had ever dared, would do the unthinkable, would create an abomination.
The only prince who can rule all Faerie is one who embodies all of it," Cademan exploded. "Not just the parts you feel are worthy."
"There, you see," Efreetus asked me. "I did not start this conflict, Domphir. The birth of the polluted prince did that. The one who combines both light and dark fey blood in a single person, and not just any dark fey blood. My brother somehow found a scion of one of their ruling families living here on Earth, away from their oversight. For they, too, would never have allowed such a union. But they didn't even know she existed, the product of some tryst by one of their princes, and by the time they did...
Aiden..." I felt my heart sink. She inclined her head.
"A prince who combines the blood of all Faerie could one day raise a dark fey army, combine it with my brother's forces, and defeat my son. But that will never be. This ends tonight."
"And with it, any real chance for peace," Cademan said,
his voice ringing out across the cave.
Because he was talking to the trolls, I realized. Our only hope for allies.
She will betray you, he told them. No matter what she has promised. Has she told you that you will rule over your own lands? That she only cares about the Light Fae? Her ambition will never allow her to stop short of taking all Faerie. As the humans say, she'll create a wasteland and call it peace, whereas I...
Efreetus cut him off with a gesture and a line of liquid syllables I didn't understand. I guess the trolls didn't either, because they just stood there.
Though allow me to translate for your friends, Cademan told her viciously, but looking at them. She said, and you would give Faerie over into the hands of savages, under a king as unclean as they are.
You lie, Efreetus said. You always...
I'm not the one planning to consolidate power and use it to destroy them. You will never obtain peace this way. None of us will, he told the trolls. Don't be foolish.
But it was too late. The troll leaders had made their decision. They were gambling on the power and wealth Efreetus and her ally had promised, and without them, we had no friends in the room.
I thought you said you'd never follow another Fae king, I reminded them desperately.
She no king, Gravelface rumbled, and I contemplated banging my head into the ground.
Efreetus glanced at Louis Cesar.
Finish this.
I looked at Cademan, who looked back at me, and for the first time I saw something other than perfect self-assurance in those green eyes. For the first time, I saw something that looked a lot like panic. And then shock, as another voice rang out across the room. It was as loud as someone using a megaphone, and so startling that I jumped and sliced open my back on the sword. While Louis Cesar stopped his run, halfway across the huge space, staring around in confusion. But not for long.
Alfild!
Louis Cesar's face abruptly turned gleeful. Mircha.
Come to watch your daughter die.
And then, out of the side of my eye, I saw a hazy version of Mircha shimmer into existence. I could see right through him, out to the snowy mountains beyond. He looked like a ghost, so much so that I wasn't sure what I was seeing. Until I realized he was in our heads.
Your head, he told me. I am transmitting this through my link with you.
So I was Wi-Fi now? I took a look at the 12-inch-long dagger in Louis Cesar's hand and decided I didn't mind so much.
I came to bargain, Mircha said, and Alfilt laughed. There is nothing you have that I want. Isn't there?
He held something up. Something familiar.
Keep it,
she snapped, looking at the little ivory casket that had once held a potent magical shield.
Consider it a souvenir of your failure. Oh, it's already a souvenir,
Mircha said mildly.
One the consul took the night she visited your palazzo all those years ago. I thought it in poor taste at the time, but I've since learned that she has excellent instincts. As soon as I heard who we were dealing with, I took a ley line to Paris, in order to retrieve it.
Louis Cesar's eyes narrowed.
What are you talking about? If you think... What I think is that you've never asked yourself an obvious question. What happened to your bones, Alfilt?
There was a sudden silence. For a moment, all I could hear was my heartbeat and the wind whistling through the cave mouth. And then...
You're bluffing.
Mircha's ghostly form opened the little casket and snapped something. And Louis Cesar jerked, as if he'd been stabbed. A dark eyebrow rose.
Believe me now.
Alfilt snarled.
If you had what you say, why not destroy me? I told you. I'm here to bargain.
He looked down at the contents of the box.
And to make a solemn vow to return your bones to Faerie, where you can be reborn among your own kind. A peaceful sleep, and then a new life. Your exile undone, your past forgotten. Or what?
Mircha's voice changed.
Or you might want to recall that we have portals too, and a new alliance with the demon lords. I'm thinking of a very nasty hell region where little creatures play among the acid pools. Creatures that other demon kind come to that world to feed upon. Think of it, Alfild, an eternity of living in a hellscape, only to reincarnate over and over, because you can't die. An eternity of being born to live a short, terrified existence, until you become prey for some stronger being. An eternity of never knowing who you are. Who you were, anything but pain and fear and death, and all of it on endless repeat. You don't have the guts. I'd find a way back. I don't think so.
Mircha's head came up suddenly, and I blinked, because I'd seen a lot of expressions on his face, but never that one. It was frightening.
And if you did, I'd be waiting. I had the guts to defy you when I was newly turned, with barely any power at all. I am not a powerless boy now, Alfild, groveling at your feet for scraps. And even when I was, I beat you. And will again, unless...
Unless what?
Unless you kill her.
He looked at Afridis.
Right now. Bravo.
I heard Cademan whisper, and then before I could quite process what was happening, the room was filled with two clouds of power, like the ones I'd seen at the consoles, only not, because these were stronger, thicker, sparkling bright and white on the one hand, and a furious reddish-black on the other. They clashed in the air overhead like a thunderstorm had blown up inside the cave, something that would have held my attention more if Luis Cesar hadn't started toward me again. But while there was still a knife in his hand, I didn't get the same feeling of menace as before. He was starting and stopping, jerking and shaking, looking even worse than the troll Dorina had ridden, and then dropping onto the ground in convulsions because he was fighting her, I realized. He was fighting. But Alfild was desperate, and despite having another problem right now, she was shoring up her control. Luis Cesar was an extremely powerful vampire, but I doubted he'd ever faced an enemy like this. I didn't know if he'd win or not. And I guess he didn't either, because the next thing I saw was him lurching to the side near one of the crates and snapping off a piece of wood, and stopping for a moment to stare at me. One last time. No! I screamed. No! And tried to run, forgetting that I couldn't, and falling, slipping on my own blood, and watching helplessly as he drove the stake straight through the heart while the knife in his other hand came up and went clattering across the floor. Dorina, I thought, seeing her shadow behind him for an instant before she did something that caused him to slump over in a spreading pool of dark crimson. I stared, not understanding anything, and the world didn't give me a chance to get a grip, because the trolls all started this way, like they were marionettes on the same string.
Dory,
Cademan said, like I hadn't already seen them. But there wasn't a lot I could do, or Mircha either, because they burst through his image, making it roll away like steam on every side and came hurtling this way. I saw Dorina rush to meet them, but I already knew it wasn't going to work. There were too many, and we were too weak, and whatever ward Afridis had thrown up around her brother, she'd used enough fey bones to make it impenetrable to his power. We had no champions left, or so I thought, before a bunch of massive, jagged-edged bones, femurs from creatures 10 and 12 and 14 feet tall, suddenly leapt up from a pile as if carried by an unseen hand,
and the next thing I knew, the trolls were bisected and trisected, and whatever it was when you have a forest of your victim's body parts suddenly spearing through your own. I saw Whitehair's eyes glaze over as he hit the cave floor, along with most of his kin. But Gravelface was made of sterner stuff. He'd been hit by at least 3 bone segments, but I guess they hadn't taken out anything vital because he kept coming, hate for me burning in his small eyes. Until purple hair, immaculate in yet another catsuit, jumped out from behind a bunch of crates and slammed a knife through his skull. Because, yeah, she was telekinetic, wasn't she? And didn't get the Senate seat if she didn't kill me herself. So I wasn't seeing a real upside here. Until she stretched out a hand that, weirdly enough, didn't have a weapon in it. I looked up at her, hurting and confused. And she put an arm under mine and pulled me up, while the storm crackled and hissed overhead, boiling brilliant white as Ulfilt's power was consumed. Dizzy and agonized, I yet remembered one of Dorina's thoughts from the Vargr attack at Claire's, one about Cademan, that he looked fey but wasn't, at least not entirely. And it looked like his sister wasn't either, because Efreetus was absorbing her power easily, too easily. We didn't have much time. Purple Hair stared upward, looking like she was thinking the same, as the light of more power than either of us had ever seen played over her face. And then she looked down at me.
"I've decided Radu was right," she said. "I don't want to be a senator."
"Yeah, me either.
Let's get out of here."
"Wait," Cademan called. She scowled in annoyance. And then a whole case of weapons jumped up from the floor and hurtled for the shield around him, making his eyes blow big. I didn't see them land because Purple Hair was protecting me with her body, but I felt the hot wind blow past, strong enough to slam us back into the ground again. And then Cademan was up, and Efreetus was facing him alone, because Ulfilt was nowhere to be seen. And then, a second later, neither was Efreetus.
"Fuck me," Purple Hair whispered. "I thought they made that shit up for the movies."
"Guess not," I said, as we watched Efreetus decide on the better part of valor, take a running jump for the opening of the cave, and be caught halfway through her fall by a giant freaking eagle. Well, she always did like birds. They soared off, leaving us with only a large army of approaching stone giants and a murderous fey king to deal with.
"We can't let Easlin have the bones," Cademan said, rounding on me.
"Well, what the hell else are we supposed to do?"
Purple Hair said, gesturing savagely with her free arm.
"Those things are going to be here any minute."
"Burn them," I said, and for some reason I felt Dorina jerk. But Cademan was nodding.
"Some of our people used to burn the dead, saying it sped up the process and allowed them to reincarnate more quickly." He glanced around. "I think these have waited long enough."
"So have we. Let's go,"
Purple Hair yelled, and grabbed a grenade. Cademan shoved the crates of weapons over by the biggest pile of bones, and then gently picked up Louis César. We ran for the door, while behind us an army crashed through the entrance to the cave, obliterating it, only to be obliterated themselves a moment later. At least, I assume so. Because Purple Hair threw that grenade like a World Series pitcher in the 9th inning, and the last thing I saw before the portal grabbed us was an explosion of light brighter than anything Efreetus had ever put out. And then we were gone. Chapter 61. I woke up in a familiar bed with a familiar guy. Louis César was sprawled next to me, wearing a lot of bandages and no clothes. I smiled at him, even though it made my cheeks ache.
"We have to stop meeting like this," I whispered, and put a hand on his chest,
and felt him flinch. I was still half asleep and groggy. The residuals of some of Claire's hideous concoctions hung in the air, which probably explained why. Or the pain that was slivering through them anyway, from my non-existent leg, like someone was poking at it with shards of glass. I'd heard of phantom limb pain,
but had never had a chance to experience it before. It was possibly the only pain I hadn't previously experienced.
"Do I shout bingo?" I wondered blearily, and sat up,
and found myself staring at a perfectly good, if seriously bruised and battered, left leg.
"What the shit fuck?"
I almost fell out of bed. Luis Cesar grabbed me just in time and hauled me back to the bed's center, which left me half underneath him. Not that I minded, but I still didn't know.
"What the hell is going on?"
He licked his lips nervously. For someone as naturally, let's be kind and say confident, as him, it was a strange sight.
"They found your leg."
"I see that."
"Mircha reattached it."
That was good of him. Considering that I lost it on senatorial business, and the Senate didn't have a medical plan. I glanced downward again, although I couldn't see anything, having a rather large amount of naked vampire in the way.
"Is it likely to stay that way?"
"He thinks so. He is hoping there is no lasting nerve damage. He is having a specialist brought in from Paris to make certain."
"That's good."
Luis Cesar didn't say anything else, and what he had said was stilted, unemotional. His body was likewise rigid, instead of the lean, muscular strength I was used to. He looked like a guy who would rather be anywhere else. It hurt more than the damned leg.
"And that's it?" I said flatly.
"You don't have anything else to say to me?"
The blue eyes had been focused somewhere on my left shoulder, but now they slid to mine, and then abruptly wandered off again.
"I am sorry," he told me.
"You damned well ought to be."
He flinched noticeably.
"I don't blame you for being furious," he said quietly. "They put me in here while I recover, but they told Claire that it might be best if I were not here when you awoke."
"What?"
"But she seemed to think otherwise, and she was right."
He manned up and met my eyes.
"I understand how you feel. I would not blame you if you never wished to see me again."
"What?"
"I took your leg."
His fingers touched it lightly, almost reverently.
"If they had not been able to find it..."
"Well, yeah, but they did find it. And if they hadn't, think of all the neat attachments I could have gotten."
It was his turn to say, "What?"
"Think of it. A peg leg, especially a sharp wooden peg leg for a damphir. It would almost be worth..." I broke off, because Luis Cesar was having a small fit. I wasn't sure of what kind, but I didn't think he was either, because his face tried out a couple dozen expressions before settling on one. It was incredulity.
"I maimed you."
"You tried to maim me." I flexed my leg at him. "And you only managed it because I was already hurt when you showed up. If I'd been at my best, I'd have kicked your..." He shook me.
"What?"
I said again.
"You are angry with me. You hate me. You possibly even fear me."
I burst out laughing. I couldn't help it. It had been a very long week, and the sudden ability just to let everything out caught me by surprise, and then sort of swept me away until I was lying there crying with laughter. Luis Cesar looked at me in growing concern.
I will go find Claire."
"I don't need Claire." I rolled on top of him. The leg, I was glad to notice, responded to commands, although it bitched at me about them. That was okay. I got that a lot. Including from my lover, I thought, judging by his expression. "You think that's what I want an apology for?" I asked him. "For the leg?"
"Yes."
"And you've been lying here blaming yourself and getting more and more worked up about it?"
"As I should do. I hurt you. I could have..."
He broke off, but it was obvious what he meant.
"But you didn't kill me.
Alfhild ordered you to, but you didn't. And when you thought you might, that there was even a chance, you tried to kill yourself instead. And that, I added before he could interrupt me, is why I'm angry. He looked at me, and he'd found a new expression. It was bewilderment. But he didn't say, what, again. He said, why, instead. And looked like he genuinely didn't get it.
Because when you're part of someone else, you don't get to make that call,
I told him quietly. And then felt like cursing because the damned man still didn't get it. I could see it in those shimmering blue eyes. Confusion, awkwardness, more than a little fear. He, who wasn't afraid of anything, was afraid of this, of me, of being sent away. And there was one really good way to solve that problem, wasn't there? I felt my fangs pop.
I'm proprietorial about my things, I snarled, and bit him.
And God, yes, it was good. So good, so warm, so rich. I heard Luis Cesar cry out, felt him grab my arms and try to push me off, but I knew his strength now, and he wasn't pushing very hard. Not that it would have mattered. I wrapped my legs around him as my fangs sank deeper, and I felt it, the swirl of magic around us. It should have been a surprise, but it wasn't. Maybe because it was so right, so good, so perfect, I heard him murmur. And then he was drawing me close, and it was. It really, really was. I awoke an indeterminate time later in a warm embrace, one that had ended up with me wedged into an armpit, with Luis Cesar draped over top of me. Like he wanted to make sure I would still be there when he woke up. No worries, I thought, letting my fingertips ghost over the tops of the new little fang marks on his neck. He shuddered slightly and drew me closer, tightening the embrace even in sleep, but not so much that I couldn't slide out from under when I felt it again, a mental tug from above. It was still dark, although on which day I didn't know. It felt like I'd been in bed a while. I was stiff, to the point that it took me an embarrassingly long time to get the sash up on a window and look out, and then to clamber onto the roof. Dorina was there, looking something like Mircea's ghostly form, only paler, less distinct. But it was more than I'd ever seen of her before.
So you can materialize?
Not to anyone else. At least, I don't think so. She sounded a bit unsure. I knew the feeling. You let them go, she said, as I settled beside her.
What?
Visuals came instead of words. Mircea's gloved hand picking up the glowing ward where Alfhild had kept her power all those years ago in Venice. Him arguing with Abramelin, who couldn't do as he'd promised after all, since he'd just made up the procedure to get Mircea to work for him. Mircea bending over me as I lay in my small child's bed, his eyes glowing with stolen power. And then there were two.
So that's how it happened,
I said, my voice hoarse. She nodded. I didn't know how to feel about that. It hadn't sounded like it was possible to return the energy stolen from the bones once it was extracted and made into something else. But even so, people had been destroyed for it, real people, with hopes and dreams and lives. It had been done at a megalomaniac's command to quench her thirst for revenge, not so Dorina and I could live. But it had given us life, all the same, and so it still felt weighty. Not like a burden, but like a gift. And a responsibility not to waste it. I'll try, I thought, staring up at the stars.
I should have told you before, Dorina said, but I was afraid.
Afraid?
So much power in those bones. Fae. Even more than vampire. I knew what Mircea had done with it.
I didn't know what you would.
Didn't you?
My voice sounded choked, even to me. With that much power, you could have locked me away forever. Made it so that I could never get out, not even when you slept. You could have been free of me, completely free for the first time.
And you could have banished me,
I pointed out. Sent me off to wither and die alone, to dissolve on the winds. Taken this body and lived your own life. Been free yourself. She shook her head.
That wouldn't have been free.
I would have been haunted by what I'd done, how I'd hurt you. She turned to look at me. I never wanted to hurt you. She raised a hand, and I swear I felt a brush of phantom fingertips against my cheek.
You do that enough to yourself.
I blinked.
What?
That wasn't exactly what I'd expected to hear.
For 500 years, you existed on the fringes, as you told our sire. What you didn't tell him is that you're still there.
In here. Her touch dropped to my chest.
Okay, I said. That's not... I don't know what you think.
500 years of watching, she told me. I saw. You weren't any freer than me. You think you decided what we did? They decided. Where you could go, what you could do. You didn't become a hunter merely because you're good at it. You did it because it was all they would allow you to be. You were Domfeer, hated, despised, outcast. It was a hard, meager, cold life. But it was all you knew. And eventually, it was all you wanted to know.
You know, you can't talk to me like...
But she could, and she did. It became familiar, comfortable. Most people are frightened on the fringes, in the woods, in the middle of the night, in the old abandoned places. They set horror movies there, don't they? But you weren't frightened. You were the eyes in the darkness, the shadow on the wall, the thing that goes bump in the night. Others were afraid of you. They didn't know those places. You did. You made them your world.
You don't understand anything.
It wasn't the dark or the cold that frightened you. It was the light and the warmth, the places where it wasn't possible to hide, the places where you had to be seen. You think I wanted all those things, family, home, children, because they were what you wanted. But you couldn't have them either. And every time you tried, every time you came close to anyone, you were hurt. So you learned to love the shadows. But the shadows are gone now. You stand in the light, surrounded by all the things you always thought you wanted, and it terrifies you. Even after what you just did, claiming that vampire, there's a part of you that wants to run. That is so afraid of losing all you have that you are thinking of throwing it away, to leave before you're left, to go back to the desolate wastes, because there, at least, you know the rules. You don't know them here.
And you do? I asked harshly. You seem so sure what I want. What about you? This doesn't scare you, all of this?
I flung out a hand because I didn't have words for all the ways my life had changed recently, and was probably going to change further. Into what I didn't know and couldn't even guess. Yes, it scares me. Epilogue. Burbles was looking grim. I almost didn't recognize him, with his normally jolly face dour and his arms crossed over his chest in what should have looked like a protective gesture, but mostly looked like he was trying to keep from strangling someone. I smiled and waved. He did not smile back.
Mircea sidled up behind me. What have you done to poor Vincent?
Saddled him with 16 in need of a home vampires.
Saddled him?
I told them they could stay in my consular suite until they figured out their housing situation. I looked over my shoulder at his amusement. Well, it's not like I'm going to be living here. We were at the consuls, waiting for the ceremony to finally confirm us newbies, which was following a bunch of other ceremonies. Because that's apparently all vamps ever do, get dressed up and parade around, trying to impress people. Which might explain Burble's current attitude. Ray's guys weren't looking so impressive.
"And where will you be living?"
Mircha murmured, leaning on the balcony beside me. I turned my head to look at him. "Why?"
"I saw Luis Cesar a few moments ago. He was looking absurdly pleased with himself."
"Are you about to get all paternal and complain that I didn't invite you to the ceremony?"
"Do you know," Mircha told me thoughtfully, "we have ceremonies for almost everything except that. The bite is considered an intimate act. It is customary to take care of it in private."
"Yeah, I could see that. We hadn't been up to much that night, both of us being exhausted and very much under the weather. But Luis Cesar had enthusiastically made it up to me several times since. Most recently in an alcove downstairs, before he had to go away to get his own family ready. Although, it was really all the same thing now, wasn't it?" I realized I was grinning stupidly and stopped it. "So what's the problem?" I asked.
"No problem. I merely wished to ask if..."
But I didn't find out what Mircha merely wished to ask, because an elegantly dressed Olga was headed our way. I had on a bias-cut sapphire blue silk thing that Luis Cesar's tailor had whipped up, and I thought I looked pretty good. But Olga was jaw-dropping in some fey ensemble that consisted of a lot of bling, a lot of gilt leather, and a lot of feathers, which she nonetheless managed to make appear regal. It helped that she had an entourage of her own, a mixed group of trolls of all sizes and descriptions, including one familiar towering blue mountain. "Hang on," I told Mircha and walked over. Blue was one of the few who had not gone all out. He was wearing what looked like the same leather loincloth he'd been in every time I saw him, and the hoary feet were unshod. But he managed the same gravitas Olga projected anyway, and frankly, he didn't need any bling. The guy was impressive enough all on his own. The tiny velvet-clad woman at his side, on the other hand, was styling. I almost didn't recognize her, because the gun-toting granny had had a makeover. Even the cigarettes were gone. She flashed me some thigh when I asked about them.
"Still got 'em, though I'm trying to quit. Fairy, you know."
"What about Fairy?"
"They don't got 'em there. And even if they did, Magdar and I are off to the hill tribes, so we'll be camping out a lot. I wouldn't be able to get any anyway."
"Hill tribes?"
She nodded.
"That's where he's from. We're gonna try to find his people, and maybe some of mine."
"Some of yours?"
"Oh, I know," she told me. "I look ancient to you, but I was young once, and met this guy, and, well, you know. He left after a while, which would have been fine, 'cause I don't need no man to take care of me. But then he came back for the babe."
"You lost your child?" She nodded, and the old eyes went soft.
"He had dark hair, like his daddy. One of the river folk," Magdar said. "He came back for my boy, and that's the last I ever saw of him. So Magdar and me, we both got people to find, you know?"
I nodded. Blue hadn't said anything, and I hadn't really expected him to. Trolls don't waste a lot of words. But then he surprised me.
"Always thought I'd die in fights,"
he said suddenly.
"Or in battle with slavers. Now?"
"Now you need a different plan." I knew how that felt. "Good luck," I told them, "to both of you." They nodded gravely and passed on, and I rejoined Mircha.
"You have interesting friends," he told me.
He glanced over the railing.
"And family."
"At least somebody got them into tuxes," I noticed. "More or less."
Ray's guys were all lined up below, ready to follow me into the ceremony, because apparently you were supposed to bring your family to these things. And I guess one's family wasn't supposed to pick their noses or scratch their asses, because Burbles, looking frighteningly like a drill sergeant suddenly, smacked the offenders' heads together. Weirdly enough, they almost looked pleased about it, straightening up and throwing their shoulders back proudly. Vamps, I thought, and shook my head.
How is Raymond?
Mircha asked, watching the farce. Recovering. He's upset he's going to miss this. I promised to take lots of pictures. I gestured at the one little camera ball we'd managed to save, which was snapping away happily. And the next moment, it had something worth the effort.
What is that?
I asked, leaning over the railing for a better look. The great concourse of the consul's ballroom fell silent as four different delegations came in from four different directions. One was headed by Cademan, with a great glowing cohort of velvet-clad, blue-robed fae. I saw Sawinny in the lineup, who saw me too, and looked like he wanted to wave, but that wouldn't be dignified. He flashed me a grin instead. The second group was headed by Olga and her trolls, which she'd picked up even more of along the way.
The local Dark Fae community has elected her as spokesperson,
Mircha murmured,
after the recent demise of two of their more prominent leaders.
She's good at that, I murmured back.
The third group was led by the consul, with a glittering stream of vampires, dressed to the nines, of course. As usual, she'd arranged to outshine everyone else. Cademan's attractive but understated robes paled in comparison, and even the troll's more exotic attire faded into the background. But she had forgotten one little thing. There was a fourth group at this party, and they didn't use the doors.
What the hell?
I said, as some of what I assumed were Claire's relatives flew in and circled around the room before coming to rest in front of a table, and changing as they stepped down to earth with perfect fluidity from one form to another. The fluttering cloths they'd worn around their scaly necks transforming into robes that swirled around their human bodies before settling into place as effortlessly as everything else they did. It kind of left everyone else's attempts in the dust.
They are here to sign a treaty,
Mircha told me.
For a long time, the animosity between Dark and Light Fae has made it difficult to negotiate any kind of an alliance for the war. The Dark Fae are tired of being cannon fodder in Light Fae conflicts, and they didn't trust Cademan.
I noticed.
Who has become so secretive over the years that I doubt he trusts anyone,
Mircha added, without a shred of irony. For once I didn't call him on it.
So what changed?
You did.
I looked up.
What?
Your status as Vargr is revered among the Dark Fae. You've proven yourself to Olga, someone they respect many times. Your roommate, Claire, has vouched for you to her father, and now you have fought and bled for them, and for the souls of their people. They've decided that your side is the right side, and the bones showed them that they couldn't sit on the sidelines in this conflict. This is a struggle for the soul of Faerie. They have to be in it, too.
But I don't want to be the reason someone goes to war.
You're not. You're just the reason they're doing it now, as part of a unified force, while we have our best chance to win. It's also why you're our new liaison to the Fae.
Cademan looked up at me suddenly, almost as if he'd heard. I narrowed my eyes at him. Why did I have the feeling he'd had a hand in that? Probably because he'd threatened to do it before. He was up to something. I knew it. But right then, I didn't care. And I cared even less a moment later, when Luis Cesar appeared below in his glittering best and our families lined up together as one. I started to go down to join them for the big procession, but Mircea caught my arm. And very strangely for him, he looked almost uncertain, off balance, like everything that had happened lately had thrown him a little too.
I wanted to ask if you are...